News Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's show. We're going to start it by my asking you this question. Do you have all this stuff figured out in D.C.? On one hand, we have what seems like 80% or so of Congress pushing back on everything this president wants to do. They end up passing into law a boondoggle of a bill that is so full of pork and gratuitous spending that we can't even figure them out. They're all hidden. All the while, they simply refuse to enforce the southern border. Period. But the logjam and misanthropy on the part of leftists for Donald Trump does not just extend into the legislative branch of government. It goes far beyond that. We've got the judicial branch, and even the president's own branch, the executive branch. Now, we knew of the corruption in the DOJ. We watched as the Obama Department of Justice initiated some of the most incorrigible and illegal programs and acts that resulted in the deaths of a number of Americans. But what is worse is it is worse than we thought. Any accountability by the perpetrators of those acts and in those programs, which, by the way, reach as far as the Obama White House, were just summarily dismissed by almost everyone in government. Until today, we have seen just a scant fraction of those unspeakable acts exposed. Every day, more new atrocities at the hands of Congress and the DOJ show their ugly heads. They've been hidden for too long. The reckoning is here, at least the first part of it. In full disclosure, part one. Today in part one, we will reveal the congressional villainy that has plagued America's lawmaking process for so long and cost American taxpayers trillions of dollars. We're going to disclose the attitude of entitlement that is nowhere else more obvious than among members of Congress, who with impunity year after year literally steal billions from us in the name of doing what's best for Americans. Members of the U.S. House of Representatives, now controlled by Democrats, feel that the power their majority gives them is a permission slip to intervene at any time, in any way they so choose, in the government funding, in that process to reward their minions while penalizing their opponents, political opponents, with the power of the purse. Nowhere else is this illustrated better and in a more timely fashion than the funding bill. Remember this name, Consolidated Appropriations Bill 2019, H.R.-648. President Trump just signed into law that bill to keep the government open. But it does much more than just that. It includes multiple examples of the graft and corruption that literally fuels Washington, D.C. Now, in part two of this story tomorrow, we will together peel back the layers of the onion called corruption in the Department of Justice. Again, that's in part two tomorrow. Folks, this expose has been fun to research and put together for you, even though we knew we have horrible issues in Washington. It has been unnerving to uncover them and to learn just how far-reaching into the dark corners of government they have been and have been for so long. This ride is certainly going to be unsettling for you. It is and was for us. The Consolidated Appropriations Act 2019, we're terming it America's current boondoggle. Nobody could wait for this bill to be passed by each House of Congress, be signed into law by the president, and start the erection of that southern border wall while protecting government employees from another work stoppage when government funding expired. It passed just in the nick of time. Of course, everybody got everything they wanted, right? Wrong. But they got a lot. An 1,169-page bill full of bucks, dollars, our dollars and cents. You haven't read it yet? Goodness, I can't believe that. Everybody should have read the bill, especially all those who passed the bill in the House and in the Senate. You know, those members of Congress. But as usual, listen closely. No member of Congress had read the bill before they voted. They each received copies of the bill, all 1,169 pages, at midnight the night before the vote. It was impossible for any one of them to read and understand everything it includes. But as usual, Congress followed the Nancy Pelosi instructions that accompanied Obamacare. Remember that one? Quote, "We've got to pass the bill so that we can find out what's in the bill." They passed it, and it's law. Certainly by now, you've read it. Of course, you haven't. Well, here's your chance. It's right here on the front page of the website. If you'll scroll down to this part of the story, there's a hyperlink. You can click on it and download it in PDF format, the entire bill. It's lengthy. It's verbose. It continuously refers back to the omnibus bill from 2018. So let's just summarize its basic contents for you today. Let's talk about the big thing, border security. Obviously, the linchpin in this bill was funding of Trump's border wall. It is amazing to me that in discussions of a bill that funds the entire federal government with about $1 trillion through September of this year, $1 trillion, folks, the only item that receives discussion is a tiny segment of a barrier that constitutes less than $2 billion, the wall. But Congress had to address it to prevent another government partial shutdown. It did, and it is a pittance. What you have not heard and will not hear any place but here is this. The bill provides a de facto amnesty pipeline for all illegal alien household members of MS-13 gang members who arrive in the U.S. as unaccompanied alien children. That's UAC. As part of a bipartisan compromise, that means, folks, some conservatives and Democrats, their compromise spending package, lawmakers included provisions that prevent federal immigration officials from deporting anyone who has close contact with UACs who are readily resettled throughout the U.S. with so-called sponsors after being trafficked across the southern border. These sponsors are oftentimes illegal alien relatives, in many cases parents of UACs. Federal officials have repeatedly noted how the UAC program has been widely used by the MS-13 gang members to import more gang members into the country. Example, last year, New York City Immigration and Customs Enforcement ICE official Angel Melendez said there are roughly 22,000 UAC potential recruits who are resettled across the country every year, out of about 40,000 total UACs that come in. These are mostly young men trafficked across the southern border from Central America, especially El Salvador, which is the home of MS-13. Let me just throw this in here. The El Salvadoran government, when they kick MS-13 gang members out, and those gang members go to other countries, they desperately, those gang members, don't want to be deported back to El Salvador. You know why? When they are deported, immediately upon their stepping foot on the ground in El Salvador, the El Salvadoran government shoots and kills them. They're so evil, they don't want them back in their country committing more serious crimes. But we can put up with that little oops in the bill, right? We're getting a big chunk of border wall barrier out of this. But wait, there's more. The new law mandates that the White House have approval from left-wing Starr County, Texas officials before the Department of Homeland Security can begin building a wall at the region's U.S.-Mexico border. Slipped into this funding bill that provides about $1.3 billion for 55 miles of border wall is a provision that prevents the Trump administration from constructing the barrier until DHS seeks input from Starr County, Texas locals and city officials. The spending bill mandates that Trump must seek to reach a mutual agreement regarding the design and alignment of physical barriers with Starr County, local elected officials, including those from Roma, Texas, Rio Grande City, Texas, Escobars, Texas, La Gruja, Texas, and Saloneo, Texas. The deal demands Trump's DHS to continue such consultations with local elected officials about the border wall until September, or until an agreement is reached. In the meantime, the spending bill stipulates that the administration cannot build any barriers while consultations are continuing with local elected officials. But there's still one more. I know you may find this hard to believe, but there are a bunch of gimmicks included in the almost 1,200-page monstrosity that only now are showing their ugly little heads. You need to follow this line of explanation very closely. Congressional members love making it difficult for everyday Americans, most of us, to understand what they are really doing when they craft and pass spending bills. Let's talk about the gimmicks. Changes in mandatory programs. Those are programs that are lumped into a group together, and Congress has termed them mandatory programs. You'll understand why in a moment. They're one of the most commonly used gimmicks in the appropriations process. On paper, mandatory spending is delayed. Okay? They allocate these funds to go in that bucket. Mandatory spending measures are delayed, creating new savings that can then be put toward unrelated discretionary spending. Think about that. Unrelated discretionary spending. In other words, pork projects that these individual members of Congress can come to their buddies and say, hey, we got some extra money here. Why don't we spend it over here? You know, kind of like on the bridge to nowhere. In reality, the vast majority of the delayed funding would never have been spent in the first place and generated no real savings. Each year, billions of dollars in new spending is enabled through those changes in mandatory programs. Now, that doesn't mean they cancel the items in those mandatory program. What they do is delay the spending. And so when it's delayed, they can spend it elsewhere. The largest change each year is delayed spending from the Department of Justice's Crime Victims Fund. This bill caps spending from the Crime Victims Fund at $3.35 billion in fiscal year 2019. However, the fund would consistently carry a balance of about $13 billion, meaning that any unobligated balance above $3.35 billion can be captured, as of today, as savings. And calling it savings, it hadn't been spent yet, it hadn't been saved, but calling it savings, they can use it to circumvent the Budget Control Act caps. And the Crime Victims Fund is not the only change in mandatory programs. In the fiscal year 2018, changes with no real savings increased spending. Not reallocated, but increased spending by nearly $18 billion. The area of the bill with the most potential for harm is in the critical areas of immigration enforcement, particularly detention beds. You've heard this being discussed during negotiations. As the number of caravans, children, families, and asylum seekers has drastically risen, the administration has been handcuffed by loopholes and prevented from quickly removing many illegal immigrants. The result is many illegal border crossers or asylum seekers are caught and released, and many disappear into the public, never to be seen again. They just don't return for their scheduled court dates. The Trump administration has attempted to limit catch and release, both at the border, but also in the interior, by expanding the number of detention beds. In this bill, Democratic efforts to set a hard cap on immigration detention were stopped. But the bill does try to push the administration to reduce the number of detention beds by limiting funding. That said, the administration is allowed to transfer or reprogram funds to expand detention, but does so at the expense of other homeland security programs, kind of left pocket, right pocket. You know, you can't do it over here, but you can do it if you take money from this pocket and put it in the left pocket. In essence, the bill forces DHS to steal from other important security and preparedness missions to fulfill the immigration enforcement mission. Critically, the bill fails to address the key loopholes in U.S. immigration law that have encouraged the drastic increases in asylum claims and families and children coming to the border. Without fixes to these loopholes and other immigration enforcement tools, border security is only a superficial fix, and detention beds will always be too few. Now, what happens if you've got 100 beds that you can put people in, and you detain 150 today? How do you handle that? Well, I can tell you how you handle it. You let those 50, you pick 50 of the 150 that you detained, and you let them go. This is crazy, isn't it, folks? This is nuts. This is our government at work for us. But listen, there's more hidden stuff, more gimmicks in this law. The omnibus includes a 1.9% pay raise for federal employees. That costs roughly $3.3 billion this year and more than $40 billion over the next 10 years. 1.9%. That doesn't sound like much, does it? Well, listen closely. This overturns a December 2018 executive order from President Trump freezing federal pay. You remember that. And for more than half of federal workers, it serves as their second pay raise in 2019. Listen to this little gimmick. Because federal workers receive both cost of living increases as well as step increases based on tenure, not performance, how long you've been on the job. On average, federal employees receive $121,000 in total compensation, compared to average private sector total compensation of $69,000, folks. That's almost twice for an identical job in the private sector compared to that same job in the government. The government employee gets $121,000 in the private sector, only $69,000. Part of this differential stems from the fact federal workers have more education and experience on average, but studies consistently find that federal employees receive a significant compensation premium. It doesn't stop there. The text of the 1169-page compromise bill was released just before midnight on Wednesday, February 13th. Remember, I told you this up top. Both houses had to debate and vote on it. And it was already law 2 days later. We know they didn't get into the bill. They couldn't get into the bill. The way those things work is they reference previous legislation, not in detail, but they'll reference bills such and such, section such and such, and they have to go back to get the details out of that. 1,169 pages, there was no way they knew what they were doing. Once again, Congress, in doing it this way, is ignoring their own budget rules. The House requires the text of legislation be available for at least 72 hours before a vote is held. This is not the way the process is supposed to work. It leaves no time for these lawmakers to even read the bill, let alone have a chance to debate it, offer amendments to improve it. That's just a symptom of the larger problem. The fiscal year is already more than 4 months old. Think about that. 4 months old, they just passed the funding bill for the 4 months that they've been spending money on, plus only the number of months through the end of September. And Congress still hasn't finalized total funding. If lawmakers were doing their job and passing budget and appropriations bills on time, continuing resolutions, omnibus bills, and government shutdowns could become obsolete, or at least the exception rather than the rule. Now let's get right to the nitty-gritty. Democrat after Democrat from both sides of the aisle have taken to the airways and declared just how unjust, un-American, and illegal is the declaration of a national emergency and the subsequent plan of the president to divert funds to pay for the construction of the border barrier. Oh, you say, we have a state of emergency? Yeah, we kind of do. Even several Republicans are against this state of emergency. It's purely partisan and in no way reflects any actions contemplated or taken against the previous 61 such declarations made by this and other presidents. Politics at its worst. We won't waste a bunch of time, but Nancy always chimes in with a quote of remarkability when it comes to congressional matters of historical nature, and this one really is. At a news conference, go figure, the House Speaker had a news conference. She railed against Trump declaring a national emergency, saying Republicans, quote, should have some dismay to the door that they are opening, the threshold they are crossing. She continued, the precedent that the president is setting here is something that should be met with great unease and dismay by the Republicans, and of course, we will respond accordingly, she said. In other words, let the lawsuits fly, and they have flown in abundance. We'll get into that later. Pelosi said an emergency declaration opens the door for other presidents to do an end run around Congress. Quote, just think of what a president with different values can present to the American people, she added. She didn't say specifically how Democrats would respond, but said that they would review their options. So let's summarize today's part one of In Full Disclosure. This action in Congress had nothing to do with southern border security, folks. Absolutely nothing. They don't want better border security. I don't care what they say. I don't care how many news sound bites you see or hear. They don't want better border security. Chairman Jerry Nadler of the Judicial Committee in the House and six other House Democrats who chair subcommittees of that committee signed a letter to the president writing that, quote, we believe your declaration of an emergency shows a reckless disregard for the separation of powers and your own responsibilities under our constitutional system. Representative Adam Smith, a Washington Democrat who chairs the Armed Services Committee, called the reallocation of funds, quote, utterly disrespectful of U.S. national security and the needs of our men and women in uniform, and it further undermines his credibility in requesting the upcoming defense budget. And it's not just Democrats. Centrist Senator Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, who was up for reelection in 2020, called Trump's move a mistake in a statement on Thursday. Collins also argued that the National Emergencies Act was only intended to apply to major national disasters or catastrophic events such as the attacks on our country. And we listed the details of some of the other National Emergency Acts that are currently in force per Barack Obama. None. Not a single one applied to, quote, major natural disasters or catastrophic events. Representative Will Hurd, Republican of Texas, whose districts cover about 800 miles along the U.S.-Mexico border, said on The View that the declaration was unnecessary and expressed concerns about land seizures that would have to take place in order to build the wall. Listen, the corruption in Congress is unfathomable until now. Let's be perfectly clear and honest. On the most part, those who serve in either House of Congress face every bill presented for their consideration, not from the perspective of how do we need to process this measure to maximize all our resources to best facilitate meeting the needs of American citizens. That's what they should say and do and think. But it's not what they say and do and think. Their almost unilateral perspective, Democrats and Republican, is how can I get what I need out of this bill? Money, power, and favorability among voters in my district. their perspectives blow as the political winds in D.C. blow on the particular day of their considerations. The bottom line is this: truthful consideration of the resources we give to them, the needs that we have, and the rule of law are gone in Congress. In conclusion, here's what they have almost entirely missed. The American electorate in sufficient numbers walked away from business as usual in Washington and voted for the one person who entered the race for the presidency that voters felt could and would fulfill campaign promises to fix legal immigration while stopping illegal immigration at our southern border. And in doing so, those same members of the electorate sent a message to Congress that we are done with status quo identity politics perpetrated by the elitist in D.C. that want nothing but control over all of us Americans. Have members of Congress gotten that message? Well, with the spending bill passed simply to temporarily pacify the president with a pittance allocated for the border barrier, apparently Congress still has not gotten it. And here's the look down the road current members of Congress and those who want in better see and understand. Congressional hypocrisy is being exposed in greater measure than ever, day after day. And Americans, in seeing the corruption, is being summarily rejected. Sending these members home is just part of the equation. Prosecution for their wrongdoing is pending. It's pending, folks. There will be a price to pay. Mark my word, there will be a price to pay. They have underestimated this president. He's not stupid. He's far from that. His validity resonates far greater with Americans than the abomination being unearthed in the midst of today's lawmakers and their activities. And it's not just in Congress. It's in the Department of Justice, too. Tomorrow, folks, come back for In Full Disclosure Part 2. The DOJ is front and center. You think you know all the corruption that is there? Get ready. There's far more than you know about today. Hey, I'm sorry this one ran a little bit long, but we had a lot of information, facts, and details that we had to get to you. It is corruption front and center in Washington. It is being exposed, and all gloves are off here at truthnewsnetwork.org. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow for part two of this story, the Department of Justice, at truthnewsnet.org. So long, everybody.
Facts and evidence is all you'll see and hear on TNN, the Truth News Network. Find it exclusively at truthnewsnet.org.